Hello, Santa Barbara, and everywhere on the internet that is listening. This is Bruce Salen, and welcome to the Bruce Salen Show, A Dad's Point of View. In place of my usual call in and tweet me and email me, I am going to have a very special show today because I have our regular guest, Wayne Levine, in studio, and we are recording a show devoted to his book, which is called Hold On to Your Nuts, The Relationship Manual for Men. It is a wonderful book, and there is much to learn from it, as you've probably known already by listening to Wayne on our weekly segments. Wayne has been my men's mentor, and in many ways has been not only a great friend, but a lifesaver, and I mean that almost literally, in guiding me through some rough patches in my life. Of course, before I was on radio and be a world-renowned writer, but I think he would actually take credit for both. And to some degree, he actually deserves it, because the lessons imparted in his book and in his work at both weekends and men's groups and private coaching are valuable. And I will let him do a little more introduction about himself and how he got into this work, what he does, who he's about, because nobody can self-promote better than my good friend Wayne.
Thanks, Bruce. I'll take it from here. So what do we want to talk about? So let me just mention how I got into this work. So I had a different company. I was in production, similar to where you were back in the day.
Post-production, though. That doesn't really count.
No, I was in video and film production. I wasn't doing movies of the week, but we were doing a lot of other work in Hollywood. And anyway, a friend of mine invited me to an open house of his men's group, and he didn't tell me much about it, but I knew that he was involved with something. And he said, why don't you just come and, you know, maybe you'll have a good time. So I went to this event. And that night really changed my life.
Were you married at the time?
Yeah, I was married. This was I had been married a while. I've been with my wife for quite a number of years.
You're going on 47 years with her? What was it? I forgot.
Only feels that way. No, almost 30.
Okay,
so yeah, I was
on.
Married, had two young kids.
Oh, already? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I went to this event, and we played some crazy game indoors. And then the men started dealing with each other around some issues that were going on amongst them. And what I heard that night, I had just never heard before. These men were talking about things openly with each other, and I had just never been in the presence of men dealing with each other that way. And there was a weekend retreat coming up in a couple of weeks. And they said there are only a couple of slots available. Do you want to go? And I said, man, I don't know what's going on here, but I want some of this. And so I registered for that weekend. And mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, I was there. And in fact, on the way home, driving home that night, I thought, oh, man, this is the first time I've made a commitment on my own about going away and doing something on the weekend without consulting my wife. And really, it was that moment that my journey into manhood began, and I was 33.
That's amazing. I really would have liked to have known you pre the men's work, because it would be a lot easier to handle you, I think, if that were the case.
You wouldn't have liked me as much, because I would have been more like you.
Oh. Are you saying that I still have work to do?
Just a tad, but don't we all?
Yes, indeed. Now, continue with the story, and I want you to clarify something for our listeners. The first time I ever heard of men's work, I thought of Robert Bly and pounding drums and bashing women. Mm-hmm. So I know that's not what you're about, nor the work, nor the book. So would you clarify what men's work means today versus what it may have meant when the term first came out, in the same way that feminism means something totally different in the bra-burning days than it may mean now?
Yes. Well, men's work has become a cliche since Robert Bly and his colleagues became well known, thanks to Bill Moyers, back in the early 90s. And, you know, he never intended to be a leader of men. He was a poet. Mm-hmm. But there was a need for men, and the men gathered. But then they got ridiculed for some of the things that they were doing. You know, it became a cliche that to be in men's work, you were naked in the woods drumming and all that sort of thing. And those young men and angry women went after these men who were doing this work. And at some point, they had had enough, and they retreated. They're still doing what they're doing.
So the good was thrown out with the bad very much in that case.
Very, very much so.
Because there was some good in that.
A lot of good. It was getting men together, starting to be honest, not feeling so isolated. But, you know, that particular sort of modality of men's work is just one way You know, all paths lead to the same place in terms of men being the men they need to be and want to be in their lives. But there are various ways of doing it. So men's work means a lot of things these days. You know, drumming is still a big part of a lot of men's work. You know, those circles that rely on Native American ritual, and there are groups who sort of use mythopoetic imagery and to teach the values of what a man is. There are lots of ways of getting to a certain point.
So why don't you continue with your journey, which now includes going to this weekend that you made the decision to do all by yourself?
I did. So I did this weekend and became involved in this organization and became a leader in the organization. And I found that I had a real affinity for the work. And I also had a real need for the work. You know, we can talk for hours just about my experiences with the men in my weekly groups and in the overnights and events that we had, where I finally started to learn what my problem was, what my issues were. When I started to get honest, I started to get honest feedback. And so I went there for one reason, but I ended up learning much more about myself than I ever wanted to. It was very painful, you know. It's very painful to find out how arrogant you are and you know, all these things that you become because you're just adapting to life and you're unconscious to, you know, how you're really showing up. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot. And then eventually, you know, I was not really enthused about my work anymore. It all became about just making a living, and that just wasn't enough for me. So I wondered if I could make a living helping men because I really enjoy doing it. So I went back to school and got my master's in clinical psychology. And while I was there
You gave up your work, or
no,
were you doing both at the same time?
I was doing both at the same time. I was able to
– And you were married and you had two small kids.
That's right. So I made –
That must have been an easy time in your marriage.
You know, well, I have an incredibly supportive wife. So what can I tell you? But also I had to do it. You know, people said, wow, that was really courageous. Well, I had to do it.
Like a calling? Would you call it something like that?
Absolutely. I mean, I was being drawn. I had been drawn to this work much earlier, and it was a higher purpose sort of work, and I wondered if I could just do this all the time. So my intention was to become a marriage family therapist, and I went back to school to get my master's. But what I learned when I went to school was that the students weren't being taught anything about the needs of men. They were being taught about the special needs of children, gay and lesbian, people of color, women, geriatric, everybody but men. And I realized that being a therapist really wasn't what I wanted to do. What I wanted to do was the men's work that first drew me to this. So I learned early on in my program that I probably wasn't going to be a therapist, although the education and the background and the philosophies, it was all important foundation.
What I've experienced from you in that regard, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that there are boundaries that are severely imposed on what a therapist can say and do. And you're not a boundaries guy.
No, I have boundary issues. Yes.
But you don't like to live by boundaries, especially when it comes to helping men.
No one's going to tell me what to do. And that's been my attitude. And yes, we don't need to get too much into it, but certainly in the state of California, it's very restrictive. And what I wanted to do, I knew early on, was conflicting with what a therapist does. I wanted to build a community of men, and I wanted to be a part of that community of men. I didn't want to work with patients. I wanted to work with the men. And that's what we're doing at the Men's Center, bettermen.org, down in Agoura Hills.
Okay. Well, we are going to have to take a break. We are going to come back to talk with Wayne Levine about his book. You are listening to The Bruce Salen Show, A Dad's Point of View. This is a special show, so no calls today. And we will be back shortly. Thank you very much.
My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today. I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed. And said, I'm gonna be like him. Yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little